here I come to save the day.
Welcome to Mighty House. This is a radio show for people with problems. Home improvement problems, that is. Send an email now to robbie@mightyhouse.net or call into the show at 877-711-5611. From foundation leaks to roof repairs, the Mighty House team is on the job. You're listening to Mighty House.
I am Ron Cowgill. The Mighty House team is back. Join us on Facebook Live right now, brought to you in part by First Northern Credit Union. First Northern Credit Union is the only community credit union in Evanston. Visit them at fncu.org to learn more about the benefits of a credit union membership in your community. We're broadcasting worldwide and live at mightyhouse.net, tunein.com. We're also on the Gab Radio Network. Just look for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. Podcasts and previous shows available at mightyhouse.net, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and on homeimprovementusa.com. Find links to all of them at mightyhouse.net. Video clips of the show are available at mightyhouse.net and on our Mighty House YouTube channel. You can follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And if you give us a call at 877-711-5611 and you get your question on the air, we've got a tape measure notepad level.
Yes.
That'll keep you square and level. It's a Mighty House keep you square and level tape measure. We'll have one of those for you. If you give us a call, 877-711-5611, and you get your question on the air. Are you looking for a luxury kitchen at an affordable price? Don't go any further than alinecabinets.com. That's A-L-I-N-E cabinets.com. And with that, I think I've got all that wrapped up. Are you ready, Rich?
Now what am I ready for?
Ready? Because right now we're just...
I'm gonna
start with this right here. Here we go. You ready? Here it is.
Nerd alert!
And now let's run.
And what happened? Where'd he go?
Did you cut him off?
No, I didn't touch anything yet.
Yet?
He was on two, right? And he.
Nice. Might go to an early commercial and see if he calls back.
You want to try and get him back there, Trixie? Allison?
Are you looking for me?
There you go.
No, Allison?
Yes, hey.
No. Look at that. They did this like flip-de-doo thing on me and moved you to three somehow.
Anyway.
Cool.
Good morning, Allison.
Hey, are you there?
Dr. Bales.
I'm here.
Excellent. Well, it's good to talk to you again. Yeah. Rich and I follow your blog religiously, I would almost say. And
Until you get to all that really hard stuff to understand.
Yes.
Then I just kind of read the highlighted parts.
Is that why you played the nerd alert?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, no, that is clearly what this whole segment for the next 20 minutes is going to be about. It's a total nerd alert. So if you like energy audits, you like to know what the scientific reasons for things happening in your home are, this is the guy you need to talk to.
And well, I mean, you got him, you got Joe Listrobick, you know, all these guys that write this, and they totally understand it. And so to them, it's just like talking about making a grilled cheese.
Yes.
Most of us, I have a better understanding than, say, our homeowners do.
Yeah.
And it still goes right over your head.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, actually, none of us really understand it. We just make it up as we go along.
Well, you do a great job of it, sir.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, so the first thing is... something that we just posted on Facebook last week, and I think it's a good lead into what we're talking about here, and that's how air moves around the house. They came up with these new registers now that you can drop in. So you take out the old one, and you cut a piece of your floor tile or whatever floor you've got down, and you put a cap over your register. And it seems to me that that would not work too good. Although it looks good, it claims that it can let the same amount of air out as a regular register. And what's the reality of that still moving the same amount of air when 90% of it's blocked?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not familiar off by your description of what product you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
They're just tile in.
Trying to pull up
tile.
The show here.
So it's a floor tile.
Is this a smart vent you're talking about?
No, it's a regular floor vent, and instead of having the... What is that? The 4x10 floor vent?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a piece of tile that you cut to sit on top of it, and it sits flush with the floor, and then you just have almost like the grout lines around the perimeter that are allowing the air to come through. And it seems like it would create a little bit of a restricted airflow the more you put these in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So it's basically like putting wooden grills in a wood hardwood floor.
Same principle. Right. Yes, sir.
Only it's actually, it looks to me like it's even more restrictive.
Yeah. Yeah. Now they.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a horrible idea for wood grills. What you're describing sounds like a horrible idea for tile.
Right. But then you go to their website, it says it moves more air than a standard register, which just sounds like a blatant lie to me.
Does the small print say that you have to put on a bigger air hammer to do that?
No. Yeah, I don't know. It could be. So I think for comfort in a home, this is one of the major issues. Probably the number one is duct sizing and registers, is it not?
Yes, it is. Well, and not just sizing and registers, but putting in fittings and putting in flex duct that's all contorted and not pulled tight. Those are the things that kill airflow. So we do a lot of duct design in our business, and one thing that really strikes you when you learn this stuff is that the thing that really cuts down airflow and let's say you've got a sheet metal duct system. It's not the straight sections of duct that hurt you. It's every time you put a fitting in, when you turn the air or when you split the air or when you come off a trunk line, those are the things that you have the biggest pressure drops at, the fittings. And when you don't do a proper design, you may easily pick very bad fittings. And it's easy to pick a fitting, so you know, just like a 90-degree turn fitting, an elbow. It's easy to pick one that is equivalent to, say, 30 or 40 feet of equivalent length of straight duct. Mm-hmm. And that's when you put a few of those in, when you put in more turns than you need, when you don't actually plan out the duct system, you end up with a lot of pressure drop and you don't get the airflow. And then if you do flex duct, you don't even know what the equivalent length of the different contortions that they put in the duct are. And one thing that has been studied is when flex duct isn't pulled tight, it makes an enormous difference. If it's just 15% compressed, so you instead of 10, let's say you get a section that would be 10 feet pulled tight, mm-hmm. if it's only 8.5 feet, that drops your pressure and your air. It increases your pressure drop and it drops your airflow 10% or so.
Okay.
Just
by using the flex.
Huge drop off there.
Right. Now, how many homes in the U.S. would you speculate actually have a system, a duct system that's actually been designed and balanced prior to installation?
I think we're up to about 17 of them now. No, just kidding. It's a very small percentage. I would say maybe even single digits. I don't know. A lot of what happens, well, no, it's more than single digits, but it's a low number. It's probably less than 50%.
But it's still a hard thing.
A lot of what happens is the contractor shows up. So the builder just hires an HVAC contractor and lets them run the show on that side.
Right.
And, you know, they've got a set of plans, which do not include mechanical plans. So the contractor shows up, takes a look at the house and looks at the rooms and says, okay, we need to put a supply vent here and here and here and here. And let's see, this room looks like it needs about 100 CFM and that room needs 200 CFM. And you know, they just eyeball the house and they're working off the rules of thumb. And then they install flex duct and then people wonder why it doesn't work, why they have comfort problems. So it's a small percentage overall that actually get designed.
Right. Well, go ahead,
when
Rich.
We hire an architectural firm to do the architectural drawings, we get structural drawings. We have them also do MEPs, the mechanical and electrical plans, and that's basically what Allison's business is, to do mechanical plans, sizing, and so on. And I've talked to them about doing it before, but my problem is we don't hire them. You have to go through our architects. So anyway, long story short, we get all these drawn up, but then you go out in the job site and you start walking the job and you're like, you didn't follow this. And we do use flex down here, and I am adamant about that. It has to be supported every 3 feet, and it has to be straight. And I've seen it go 180 degrees.
Turn circles. And Allison has those posted on his site, too.
And if you do this, it will work great. Number one.
Okay, we're going to have to hold on, Allison. We got to take a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to save that for after the break. And if you're joining us on Facebook Live, who knows what we'll be talking about there, but it'll be something geeky, I'm sure. So we'll be back right after this.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.
You see this hammer in my hand?
Yeah, I'm going to find that sad finder. What does it look like?
And a level.
What is a level?
Don't you know what a level is?
Yeah, it's something you advance to in a video game.
It's Mighty House. Call Mighty House now at 847-475-1590 and get all your answers from the experts.
This is Mighty House.
All right, we're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net, TuneIn.com. We're also on the Gab Radio Network. Just look for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. Podcasts and preview shows available at MightyHouse.net, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. Find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. You can follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show, and our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And if you give us a call at 877-711-5611, we might be able to get you hooked up with a square and level MightyHouse.net tape measure. So we got those sitting around here now, too. All right. We've got Allison Bales on. He's calling in from Georgia. He is with Energy Vanguard. Is that the name of your company, too, or is that just your blog page?
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Okay.
That's it.
So before the break, we were going to go over a couple of quick things that everybody should look for and do. And go ahead and run those down if you could, please.
Yeah. So we were talking about flex duct and the reduced airflow that you get with poor duct installations, whether it's flex or hard pipe.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying I've got two rules for flex duct. I like flex duct. Flex duct can work really well if it's installed properly. And these are the two rules. Number one, use it only for straight runs in your duct system.
Okay.
And number two, pull it tight. So that means whenever you're turning the air, if you're coming across and you've got a boot and you're going to make that 90-degree turn to connect the duct to the boot, you don't just turn the flex duct to connect to the boot. You put a rigid elbow there, and that will perform much better than putting that flex duct to make the turn.
So you should only be using the flex for straight runs.
Yeah.
Straight runs. Now you can make, if you've got a long gradual turn, that's okay. But you want to make sure that you run it as straight as possible and pull it tight. So whenever when it looks like you've got a pretty sharp turn, or anything like that, you need to use a fitting, a rigid elbow or some type of fitting.
Okay, Rich.
And I think they actually have proposed changes to the HVAC, the code, mechanical code, that they're going to kind of dictate that any turn has to be done with a hard pipe.
Oh, really?
But I don't know when. I think that's for it was 2018, but since we're there, I don't think it'll happen yet.
So is it better to use 245s then, Allison, or can we still use a 90?
Well, yeah, the 45s are better than 90s.
Okay.
Yes.
Because if you've got the room, then throwing 245s together, make that turn less sharp is going to improve your airflow then. So it's kind of like plumbing, because that's what we do with the plumbing. We don't use 90s anymore on the drain side. We use 245s and use sweeps so that way you get better flow of the water. So sounds like air is kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah. Well, air and water are both fluids, things that flow and obey the same principles. The properties of those two fluids are different. Water is a lot more dense. And
it's wetter.
So you have to factor that in, but they're both fluids.
Yeah. Rich said it's also wetter.
Of course, I live in South Florida, so the humidity, it may not be wetter. the air can be wetter than the water.
Which,
the air and the water are both wet down there.
So,
I mean, I've reached out to Dr. Bell's there. I had a house that we were monitoring because we had some water problems in the attic and all that. And so I was monitoring indoor temperature and humidity and attic temperature and humidity.
Right.
And it's just, it's sort of all over the board. But I figured as long as I was within a few percent higher in the attic, I was probably, you know, in the humidity, I was probably good.
Right.
And that's about all I can do without, like he even said, like without doing all the monitoring with the, you know, all kinds of crazy testing, it's like hard to get accurate. But
Okay.
And what it was all air leakage.
Just air leakage from the house.
Well, some idiot popping holes through my insulation.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the questions that we wanted to try to go over also is, everybody watches HGTV or DIY Network, and they see people putting in insulation and then putting up plastic and doing all these crazy things. But is the same thing that someone does in Minnesota the same thing that Rich should be doing in Florida? And how do we know?
Absolutely not. Minnesota and Florida, you should absolutely not be doing the same thing. Now, in both of those places, some parts of them anyway, you could put plastic in the walls, although anywhere where you're doing both heating and air conditioning is probably best to avoid putting plastic, you know, the 6 mil poly into the walls, whether inside or outside, because it's going to be on the wrong side for part of the year if you're doing heating and cooling. If you're in a part of the north where you don't have air conditioning, it never gets hot enough in the summer for you to worry about air conditioning, then you can put plastic in the walls on the inside of the house, and it's not going to be that big a deal. Same thing in Florida. I mean, if you're in South Florida and pretty much never do heating except a year like this when the iguanas are falling out of the trees, then you can put plastic on the outside of the house. But we have so many choices for building materials now, some better choices than 6 mil poly for wall assemblies. It's just generally not a good idea to put plastic in the walls anywhere.
Right. So that's kind of where I was going to go with this questioning too, is we shouldn't be putting any plastic in walls, period. And should vapor barriers, like the insulation with the paper on it, should that be in the walls? Or should we be eliminating all of that right now?
Vapor barriers. Where do we start? So first of all, let's start with this. So I've got another rule for you.
Okay.
It's not really a rule. It's a principle. And that is that building assemblies need to be able to dry more than they need to be able to stop water vapor from getting in.
Okay.
For the most part, that's the case. So whenever we put plastic in a wall, we're stopping water vapor from moving through. And yes, that can stop things from getting wet, but it can also stop things from drying out if the water is on the wrong side of that plastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be careful when you put materials in that don't let the assemblies dry out. So you mentioned vapor barriers, and there's a lot of confusion about vapor barriers. I am not a fan of the word vapor barrier because people use it for all kinds of things. People use it for things that aren't even vapor barriers at all in any sense.
Okay.
And you were talking about the craft paper facing on insulation, on fiberglass mats.
Right.
So that is a vapor retarder. It's, I believe, a class 2 vapor retarder. And they've divided it up into classes based on how much it resists the flow of water vapor.
Okay.
Class 1 would be like 6 mil poly. So that would be something that's on the number scale, it would be 0.1 or 0.1 or less. That would be a class 1. Class 2 would be 0.1 to 1, and class 3 would be 1 to 10. Anything above 10 perms is the unit. Anything above 10 perms is vapor permeable. So you got vapor permeable, and then class 3 and class 2 and class 1.
Okay, wait 2 seconds.
Way to more and more resistance.
Please hold.
Yeah.
Water vapor movement.
Nerd alert!
Does that make sense?
Yes, perfect. Yes.
Well, it does to me.
So, yeah. So we're following you. Vapor retarders, they're specified in the code.
Right.
And generally, you don't need class one vapor retarders, except in a couple places. So where you do want class one vapor retarders, like the 6 mil poly or even thicker poly, would be under a slab.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing an encapsulated crawl space. And then you definitely want vapor barriers. You know, so when somebody says the word vapor barrier, I'm thinking class one vapor retarder, so like 6 mil poly.
Right.
Class two vapor retarder, like the craft paper facing, a lot of people call that a vapor barrier. It is a vapor retarder. It does slow it down. And then there's class three, so OSB and plywood would be class three vapor retarders. And so you've got to look at all these things, and you need a big nerd alert for this one.
Okay, here we go. Because I'm ready.
Nerd alert!
In passive house, so there's this thing called passive house where they build super insulated houses, and mm-hmm. it started back in the 70s or even earlier, but mostly in the 70s it sprang up, and they build thick walls with lots of insulation, and they have energy modeling programs now that do hydrothermal analysis.
Whoa, that's
so
a big word.
It models the flow of heat and moisture through walls and ceilings and floors, and looks at whether you're going to have a problem or not. So it models that flow and the drying and wetting of materials, and looks at what happens over months and years, and it will tell you how likely you are to grow mold in those materials and all kinds of cool stuff like that. Mostly, you can do that with new assemblies, with new materials. It's definitely a good exercise to go through. But if you stick with assemblies that we know work, then you don't have to worry about the hydrothermal analysis.
Right. So then to kind of wrap this back around, how does someone know when they're watching a TV show that what they're seeing is what they need to be doing in their house? You know,
good question.
You know, so how do they verify all that?
Okay. Well, first of all, in Canada, in a lot of places in Canada, I don't know if the whole country requires, but I know in Ontario, I think they still require plastic in the walls.
That's what
you've got to put the 6 mil poly if it's required by code.
That's what Mike Holmes does then.
Always check with your local code what the requirements are.
Yeah.
There you go.
Now, that doesn't mean it's a smart thing to do, because North Carolina required plastic on the inside of the walls for a while, and they rotted out a lot of walls doing that.
Yeah, so did Chicago.
Right.
So you've just got to be careful. In general, as I said, if you're doing heating and air conditioning, putting class one vapor retarders like poly in the walls is not a good idea. You want things to be able to dry out, and so you got to be careful about choosing your assembly. So when you're watching these shows, if they're putting plastic in the walls, that be careful about thinking that you can do that.
Right. Okay. We got to take a quick break again. Can you stick around one more segment, Allison?
Sure.
Okay, we're talking to Allison Bales from Energy Vanguard. We'll be back right after this.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.
Here I come to save the day.
Here they come to save the day. This is Mighty House.
All right. We're broadcasting worldwide and live, mightyhouse.net, tunein.com. We're also on the Gab Radio Network. Just look for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And if you can join us right now on Facebook Live, brought to you in part by First Northern Credit Union. First Northern Credit Union is the only community credit union in Evanston. Visit them at fncu.org to learn more about the benefits of a credit union membership in your community. All right, with that, Robbie?
Yes.
Okay. Allison Bales, we've got him on the phone, and mm-hmm. Allison is from Energy Vanguard.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's Dr. Bales. He didn't take all them classes to be called Allison Bales.
And so
I had a doctor yell at me once like that. I thought it was funny. I didn't take all those classes to be called Bill.
I don't do that.
Dr. Bill.
And then real quick, Sonar, what did you have for Robbie there in that last segment? If you weren't watching on Facebook Live, did you have something
Someone
for Robbie?
I had a question on Facebook.
Yeah.
What about Tyvek? Because you guys were talking about barriers and
right.
sealant.
Mm-hmm. But before that, we have something to do.
Yeah, go ahead.
You were going to make some sound?
what was...
This
is what Robbie hears when Allison starts talking.
Mm-hmm.
Here's. Oh, did you already get rid of it?
Let me find it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, listeners, wake up.
Yeah. Hello. Hey. What do you mean?
Wake up.
Hey,
okay.
Stop that.
This is the challenge. I will give a free gift.
Yeah.
This really cool
tape measure?
Mighty House tape measures with the little bubbler. And the little pen and the little notepad to anybody who can call up and in 60 seconds tell me what Allison, Ron, and Rich have been talking about for the last half hour. You have 60 seconds to explain to me what they've been talking about. The number, 877-711-5611. 877-711-5611.
Uh-huh.
Call now. You will get a prize. It's not you may win.
Yeah.
You can explain to me.
Okay, so here's what Robbie hears when Allison starts talking and Rich and I.
Mm-hmm. That's actual footage of me snoring. Okay, 877-711-5611. Please call. Okay, go ahead. Back to you guys.
Thanks for being a good sport there, Allison.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great.
Okay, so... we've got one segment left here, and the question coming in on Facebook Live was, what about putting on the house wraps, the Tyvek, the Typars? Should we be using those also?
Yes, absolutely. So let's back up a little bit. We've been focusing on water vapor, and that's not the most important thing that we have to worry about. The first thing we need to control with our building enclosure is liquid water. That's what can damage a house the fastest. You know, building failures most often are caused by liquid water problems. When you have drainage problems where the water gets into the window framing and rots out the framing in there, or you've got a roof leak and it gets in somewhere and starts growing mold or all these kinds of things. So you've got to control the liquid water first.
Okay.
And that's what house wrap is for. That's what the products like Huber's Zip Sheathing, which has basically like house wrap adhered to the sheathing, the
mm-hmm.
OSB sheathing.
Right.
And there's liquid applied membranes that you can spray on or paint on. And there's peel and stick membranes. So there's a variety of membranes or materials that you can use to control the liquid water, because the cladding, whether it's brick or siding or stucco, is not going to stop all the water from getting in behind it.
Right.
And that water that gets behind it, you need to control. You need to get it to drain down and away from the house, and that's what you use a drainage plane for. And house wrap is a drainage plane. The Zip sheathing from Huber is a drainage plane. The liquid applied, those different kinds of things are drainage planes. And the old houses, it was just felt. We used felt on houses for the drainage plane.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we need something like that, and it needs to be installed properly for it to work.
there's the key. There's always the flaw in the logic.
Yeah, so there. That's what Rich says.
Yes,
you don't want to
absolutely.
Tuck your raincoat into your rain boots. And that's what
right.
a lot of people do.
Yeah, or even worse, they tuck it into their pants.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Or even worse, they tuck it into their underwear.
Yes. But we've seen that. I mean, how many times have you seen where the guys put Tyvek on the walls, they slice it open, they stick the windows in there, and the Tyvek, you've got the Tyvek run behind the window.
Yep.
Behind the nailing fins and stuff.
Yep.
And then they think that the nailing fins are the flashing, so then they just throw a little Tyvek tape around there. It's like, no, you've just tucked your raincoat into your pants, and now you've made sure the water has nowhere to go but in there by taping it off like that.
Right.
So
right.
Yep.
It's brutal trying to keep an eye on everybody all the time.
And there is no formal training. I mean, you can go to you know, any of the house reps will show you how to properly install and flash around openings, but nobody actually reads them or sits and watches those. So
right.
you consistently can drive, at least around here in Chicago, drive around and still see windows being and doors being installed incorrectly and the house wrap not being on there properly. And I can only assume that's happening where Rich is at and all around the country.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and people send me pictures of this stuff. I mean, I see it around here, and people send me pictures all the time. And I'll do blog articles about that because it's an important issue. I mean, you got to control the liquid water, and you've got to – I mean, there's a lot of materials that can do it, but they have to be installed properly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct. Where was that going? Oh, the other thing, we also had a caller call in and wanted to know – about closed cell foam. You know, you're seeing that on TV a lot now. Is that something that Rich should be using in Florida, or is that something that only someone in Minnesota or around here in Chicago should be using?
I use it in every one of my wine rooms.
So then is closed cell foam kind of have that same issue, because that also is a vapor barrier, is it not?
Well, closed cell foam is a great product. It is a class 2 vapor retarder, so it's in the middle, on the lower end, and it can do a number of jobs for controlling. So we've talked about control just a little bit. With a building, you need to control the flows of heat, air, and moisture. And moisture comes in the two forms, liquid and vapor, which we mentioned. So you've got to control all four of those things: air, water, in the two forms, and heat. Closed cell spray foam actually controls all of those things. You can use it on the outside of a building as your drainage plane, as your insulation, as a vapor control layer, and as air control, an air barrier. So it's a good product, and it can be used in Florida and Minnesota and Chicago and everywhere. In colder climates, vapor retardants is more important because you have materials that stay colder, and cold things can be wet things if you're not careful.
Mm-hmm.
So in cold climates, if you're spraying foam on a roof line, for example, encapsulated attics are where spray foam shines.
Right.
And it's used a lot for encapsulating attics. So you get your ductwork inside the building enclosure that way, and your attic becomes conditioned or semi-conditioned space. In cold climates, you either need to use closed cell spray foam, or if you use open cell spray foam, you need to put a vapor retarder on it.
Yeah.
In Florida, you can use open cell spray foam without a vapor retarder, although there's issues there that would be a whole nother show.
Right. Yeah. No. And because Rich does talk about that he doesn't use closed cell foam, and they use open in their walls, and mm-hmm. it's. Like you said, that's a whole separate show of to why that needs to be done. Do you have a blog mm-hmm. on that? Have you done
he does.
Yes.
And I go back to it all the time.
Yeah. Good.
No, I think it was you, and I could be wrong. Wasn't it Joe Listerbeck, I think, was one of the authors or the study, like that the roof scenarios that they did, some testing.
Yeah.
But, yes, I keep that blog
Joe's
on my desk.
Joe's done a lot with this stuff.
Yeah.
So
it is interesting how that, you know, you got pathways for moisture, but I agree with what Allison said. My biggest concern is liquid water,
mm-hmm.
because if I can keep that out, the vapor we can have move around. We can dehumidify an attic in worst case. There's things we can do with the vapor. Liquid water is a problem.
Yep.
Right. So if we keep that out, that's number one, no matter where you're at in the country.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. One other thing that the latest thing we're seeing around here a lot is getting your duct clean, you know, all the ducts cleaned out and then sealed. And, you know, mm-hmm. all of a sudden people do this, and now the house that was, you know, heated and cooled evenly all of a sudden isn't anymore. Is duct sealing mm-hmm. a way to go, or how should people deal with that?
Duct sealing is important. And so here's one of the problems with duct sealing. In older houses or in older systems, existing homes, if you've got a system that was not designed properly, like we were talking about earlier.
All of them.
Where the contractor just showed up and eyeballed the house and used rules of thumb to figure out what size ductwork to put in and what size vents and everything. The airflow may or may not be very good in that house as it is. And what happens is the duct system is more restrictive than it should be because they didn't do proper design. And they put in a bigger system than they need because they need the bigger blower to force the air through this overly restrictive duct system.
The bigger hammer theory.
Yes. So when you seal that restrictive duct system up, now you're going to get less airflow because the leaks in the system actually help the airflow because they keep the pressure low. you've got these places where the air can escape. And what happens if you seal it up, you could end up moving too little air over the heat exchanger in the furnace or the coil in the air conditioner. You could freeze up a coil in summertime with, if the airflow is too low. You can crack a heat exchanger if the airflow is too low, because if the airflow is too low, it's not picking up enough heat from the heat exchanger on a furnace.
Right.
And that means the heat exchanger, which is sized for a certain amount of combustion and heat going through it, if the air is not picking up enough, that heat exchanger itself will get hotter and hotter, and it can crack if it gets too hot. If that heat exchanger cracks, now the exhaust products from the combustion get mixed in with the air that's going in for heating the house, and your duct system can become a poison delivery system.
Yes.
Not good.
Nice. All right, Allison, I appreciate it, buddy, and we'll have to talk to you soon.
This
we're out of here.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.
I built things. I don't know if y'all realize the pressure a man like me's got on it.
This is Mighty House.
All right, we're back with Allison Bales and from Energy Vanguard. And we've been talking to him this hour all about different stuff for heating and cooling and how to make your house more comfortable. And you can find out more information. He writes an excellent blog, energyvanguard.com. It's energyvanguard.com. And Allison, real quick, we were just talking through the break there on Facebook Live. Unvented fireplaces, I highly dislike them, and I will disconnect them for clients when I find them in their condo buildings and stuff. You've got a great article on that on Energy Vanguard, and I would suggest people go there to read that. That's something that actually we can share with everybody because it's an important thing for people to know, and I think it was written at a level that most people can understand it. It's not some of these physics problems that you post on there sometimes too, which are hilarious. I enjoy them, but I understand not everybody's going to get it. So I just wanted to bring you back on the air and say thanks for your time today, and hopefully we can get you back on again because we have a blast talking to you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. That's great, and I'd love to come back.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I'll give Robbie your number directly so she can start asking questions.
Thank you.
So I appreciate it, Allison, and we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All righty. Talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
There we go. EnergyVanguard.com. He writes an excellent blog. He does a couple a week at least, and you have a good time listening to him, or in this case, reading what he's got to say. So he's always up on the latest trends of energy efficiency in your home, and so it's well worth the read. Are you okay, Robbie?
Yes.
I got so hard.
I need a stick to poke her and get her.
I'm trying so hard.
Well, I have two new estimators, and one of them is a lot like I am, where he's educated in the building science part of it. So we'll sit there and talk this stuff. And my boss, he kind of sits there looking at us going, what the hell are you talking about? It's like, I love the building science because, you know, you want to do this, but it's going to affect that. And you got to think through it all.
Yes.
And they go to the extent of modeling. I mean, when you read those ones where they're showing the models, you know, how they did all this stuff, and you're like, really?
Wow, excellent.
It's a lot of data to digest.
Yes, it is. So are you ready for something a little bit lighter, a new topic there,
ready.
Robbie? Okay, here we go. Here we go. One, two, three. Do you have a disarrangement disorder? Can't seem to get that jumbled hodgepodge pile of chaos in one place? Maybe it's time for a little disposal, a little cleanup, a little eradication, evacuation, liquidation, and purgification. Here's Robbie with a tip on how to put some neatness into your disorder. This is Clutter Clarity on Mighty House.
Save me from this prison. Lord, help me get away. Cause only you can save me now from this misery. I've been lost in my own place, and I'm getting weary. How far is heaven? And I know that I need to change my ways of living. How far is heaven? Lord, can you tell me?
Hi.
We're twinsies here, Robbie.
We are. It's so cute.
Sonar puts us up side by side. Look at that. We're Mr. Floor twinsies.
Yep. Yay. Where's Richie Rich?
There he is.
I was ducked out.
Hi, Rich.
I ducked out. I was over by Dare.
There, now I have to do this way to get Rich.
Wait. There you go.
Whoa! Hi. Okay. Hi. How safe is your supermarket?
It's extremely safe because I don't go there.
Ooh. But the food inside there and other things. This is a great article
about
food safety and other things at the supermarket.
Uh-huh.
So just a couple of highlights. Fruit flies.
Fruit flies.
If you see fruit flies.
Fruit doesn't fly.
This is the last one I'm doing. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you see fruit flies, it means that your food is leaking, breaking down, wilting, or moldy. Employees need to pull that section apart, clean, and restock.
Or fermenting.
It could be right.
Fermenting.
Now, it's funny because I had a big argument with somebody once about where fruit flies come from, and they say they come from the fruit. And I said, no, fruit flies are attracted to the moldy fruit. And they said, no, you can bring home a piece of fruit and it has fruit flies. And I'm like, the fruit flies might have been hatched on the fruit, but the fruit flies...
Yeah, eggs were laid on it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But, like, fruit flies do not come from the fruit. We had this big argument about that. Okay.
That's just straight science.
And it's straight up.
You can Google that.
Big argument. Cut melon. Refrigerate cut produce or keep it on ice to shield it from bacteria, especially melons and leafy greens, which are low in antibacterial acids. Now, always wash your melons before you cut them. Keep it together.
Okay.
Keep it together. Okay. Cantaloupes. You'll buy a cantaloupe and you'll cut it in half. What's happening is if the outside has any bacteria on it, uh-huh. E. coli, salmonella, whatever. When you slice it, you're slicing it right into the fruit. So
you're passing that off the outside
right.
and into the center where you're actually going to be eating.
Exactly.
It.
Now, I know people can think I'm lame, but I wash that type of fruit all the time. I also wash my eggs before I crack an egg into something.
And then that's why you're allergic to everything, because you're always getting... You're always like sanitizing everything. You don't ever get infected with anything, so then you're always sick.
All right.
So if you eat dirt, you're going to be healthier.
When's the last time I was sick?
I don't know.
Exactly. So I'm just saying that there are things.
So you eat dirt.
Cantaloupes can harbor a lot of bacteria on them, uh-huh. and then so can eggs if the eggs are not cleaned properly before they're put into the grocery store.
Okay.
So you might want to wash those. Now, it's interesting because a while ago, they were a lot of people were getting, I think it was salmonella, I'm not 100% sure, but from like bean sprouts,
mm-hmm.
alfalfa sprouts and bean sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't eat those at all. And this article says, too, sprouts are grown slowly in moist, warm conditions, a perfect environment for pathogenic organisms to grow, says this woman with the Food Marketing Institute. Growers must follow FDA rules, but some experts are still wary.
Sure, all of those.
I don't eat raw sprouts except by accident.
So what are you supposed to do, steam them?
Well, like they say, you don't.
That's what my food eats.
Don't eat them.
There you go, Rich.
I can't remember which place it was. It was like the Jimmy John's it was Jimmy John's that used to always put sprouts. And I always said, do not let sprouts touch my food.
Mm-hmm.
And they no longer put sprouts on their food.
They don't even offer it.
No.
It's not even there.
Because too many people got sick from it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Good for you.
Because I eat dirt.
Because you eat dirt. Uh-huh. It has nothing to do with dirt. Okay.
It has everything to do with it.
A lot of customers, you ever notice this, lick their finger to pry open and off the rolled plastic bag before picking through the produce?
Uh-huh.
So then the saliva is coating your food. So they're going, uh-huh, okay. And they pick up, uh-huh.
What about when they peel off a dollar bill and they lick their thumb first to peel off
Nobody
a dollar
bill? Nobody does that.
It's fine the first time. It's the second time that becomes a problem.
Nobody
Clean,
does that.
Clean, fine, now contaminated.
That's disgusting. So gross. Really?
Really.
Every $20 bill's got cocaine on it.
There you go.
You ever see people dip a vegetable into the salad dressing because they're not sure, you know, if they like? No. I can't believe my time is up. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. We'll carry it on through the break on Facebook Live.
This is Mighty House.
But
Mighty
I can't.
Mighty House will return.
You can.